You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California condors cast an imposing shadow with their nearly 10-foot wingspans and once thrived across the country, including Northern California coastal redwoods. But these large scavengers have been endangered for decades as condor populations dwindled and disappeared from habitats spanning California to Florida. In recent years, significant efforts have been made to save the species from extinction, and the tide has begun to turn. Almost 3 years ago, California condors again returned to the skies above Humboldt County redwoods for the first time in over a century. This return was made possible by the Yurok tribe, which holds the condor as a sacred cultural and spiritual symbol and has been rehabilitating and releasing the birds. The tribe joined us nearly 3 years ago here on Insight for this milestone, and since then, over a dozen condors have been released since those first birds took flight. But they've also faced dangers in the wild, which have cut some lives short. Tiana Williams-Clausen is the director for the Yurok Tribe Wildlife Department and joins us now with how these releases have been going. Welcome back, Tiana.
Thanks so much, Vicky. I'm happy to be back today.
Well, thank you for taking the time. Remind us a little bit about the Northern California Condor Restoration Program and how it got its start with the Yurok Tribe.
As you mentioned, the California condor, or Priganish in the Yurok language, is one that is deeply culturally important, not only to the Yurok people, but to many of the tribes within the California North Coast area. And they've been locally extirpated since probably before the turn into the 20th century. So 1892 is kind of the last documented condor in our region. But not having them in our landscape has been a deep cultural and ecological wound. So at one point, the Yurok tribe had established a panel of our elders to help us prioritize natural and cultural restoration needs, and they chose Priganish, the California condor, to return all the way back in 2003. It took us till about 2008 to really get some traction, and we got a feasibility funding grant, feasibility analysis grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Did a lot of assessment for potential contaminants, for how they might fit into the human world as it exists today. And ultimately, after about 14 years, we finally released condors back into our skies in 2022.
Yeah, it was a big moment. I loved having that conversation. It was about the week or two prior to those first condors taking flight, and something that hasn't happened since the late 1800s, which is just incredible. From an ecological standpoint, condors are very large scavengers. What role do they play in the ecosystem?
So condors actually are the largest land-based bird in North America, with a wingspan, as you mentioned, of almost 10 feet, and they can weigh as much as 25 pounds. We did have our local avian scavengers, so we still have turkey vultures, we still have common ravens, but they're significantly smaller. So the ecological niche that condors fit is really starting the breakdown on the very large megafauna, we call them, the large animals. So elk, bear, California sea lions, whales, that other smaller scavengers just can't handle. And so they not only feed themselves and start that breakdown process, but then open those food resources to other animals out there on the landscape.
Yeah, and of course, you mentioned that condors play a huge cultural and spiritual symbol for the Yurok tribe. Tell us a little bit about the role that they play in Yurok culture.
Sure. It definitely ties to kind of that cleanup crew role that they have in the environments. But we as Yurok people, and again, our surrounding peoples, consider ourselves to be world renewal or fix the earth people. We consider it our foundational reason for being here to help promote and maintain a healthy balance, which includes the environment, ourselves, our spirits. And so condor, our relationship with condor in our stories goes all the way back to the beginning of time when we were establishing the ceremonies that we continue to utilize to help keep that world in balance. In our stories, he provided one of our lead prayers for those ceremonies. We believe that he carries our prayers across the world when we're asking for the world to be in balance. And when a condor will drop a feather, we'll actually pick up that feather and then utilize it in our regalia to kind of bring that spirit of renewal and restoration into our ceremony.
Yeah, I would imagine there's also symbolism in the fact that these condors haven't been over your ancestral homelands for more than a century. And so that imbalance has existed for generations.
Really has. And I just have so much love for our tribal elders, many of whom never met a condor in their life because they went locally extinct so long ago, but who maintained that relationship, that story of condor through the generations, through the toughest of times, in order to understand how important it was for him to come back to our ancestral territory.
So in May of 2022, almost 3 years ago, the first condors took flight. You, of course, were there for that moment. How was that experience for you? This was over a decade in the making.
It's very exciting. We were privileged to work with our public relations crew to actually do a live feed. So we had hundreds of people watching at the same time. So that was really fun. And I'm back there in the background doing what I'm told sounded like ASMR whispering, because you got to keep quiet. On what's going on. We tend to work on what we call condor time. So we've got plans for the condors, but it's not going to work unless the condors agree to it. And so we had four birds at that time who had been in our flight pen. They'd been acclimating for about 2 months to really get used to the area. They come from our partners at the breeding and rearing facility. So they're young condors who've actually never been out in the wild. And we want to give them an opportunity to get a feel for things before they're actually let loose. And so we do what's called a soft release. We let the condors decide when they want to go out instead of like throwing them out the door. And so we have our main release pen and then what we call a double door trap, which has a door to the pen and then a door to the outdoors. You bait it with a carcass and then you see who wants to go in. Usually you have birds that look like they're ready to go. Their behavior is good. They seem healthy. All of our birds looked good to go. But it turns out that our two birds, A3 and A2, they've all got alphanumeric tags so that we can recognize them visually, decided to go in first. And so we release in pairs or singly because, again, these are young birds that have never been in the wild. So we really want to make sure that we can give them the dedicated attention that they need. But when A3 and A2 went in together, they're actually best buds from then and have been ever since then. So that wasn't too surprising. We carefully closed the door to the pen behind them. And then carefully opened a door to the exterior. And we had staged the whole thing so that we had a carcass also on the outside and we'd had turkey vultures landing so that they could look and see, hey, this is a safe place to land and eat. And that was our hope that they would just land and we could observe them. But so we closed the doors and opened the other. And as was expected, they got a little bit spooky. They don't like things changing conformation behind them. And it was kind of funny watching him rock forward towards the gate and rock back and kind of question, was this really happening or what's going on here? But eventually A3 just went for it and launched himself into the sky. And A2 followed immediately afterwards. They did not stop to eat at the carcass. They just took off into the wild blue yonder. So it makes me laugh as a biologist. Animals are not going to do what you want them to do. But it was the most incredible feeling I think I've had. I'll put having my daughter up there as incredible feelings in life, but this was pretty close. Just seeing that natural instinct for those birds just take flight and take them into the blue skies.
It must also be bittersweet as well. Obviously, that's what you want. You want them to be released and to thrive in the wild, but you must have developed a relationship with them. I know that they're A3 and A2, but you know, maybe you had a nickname for them, and you know, seeing them take off could be bittersweet and emotional.
Absolutely, especially since we watched them daily after they joined us. So we could really get a sense of their personalities. They are very intelligent birds. They're very social, but they're also very individualistic. Like I said, A3 and A2 were best of buds from day one. That said, and after talking to kind of our cultural leaders about the appropriateness of it, we did determine that as birds are released, we would be providing them with Yurok nicknames because it's traditional as something big happens in Yurok life that you get a new name. And so we figured them joining us again was a big milestone for them. And so A3, as the first one out the door, was nicknamed Poitwasan, which means the one who goes out ahead and is a traditional name for our village leaders or our ceremonial leaders. And then A2, who followed right after, was nicknamed Nesquichok, which means he returns, kind of representing the fact that condors have come back to Yurok country after such a long absence.
So how many condors have you released so far, nearly 3 years later?
We are currently up to 17 condors. we had released 18 and when and if we want to talk about it, we have unfortunately undergone our first loss. But currently there are 17 free-flying condors.
Yeah. Well, we can get into that. Well, if you're listening to Inside here on CAP Radio, we're talking with Tiana Williams-Clausen from the Yurok Tribe about their California Condor Restoration Program, which released its first birds almost 3 years ago. And this was something that was more than a century in the making. It was a huge deal. You mentioned that you've released 17 condors in the past 3 years, give or take. But there have been dangers and challenges that have cut some condors' lives short. What's happened?
Yeah, so, I mean, always when you're working with an endangered or threatened or endangered species, you know that there's going to be mortality events. That's just the nature of wildlife. So it's something we had prepared ourselves for. Unfortunately for condors, they are still on the endangered list, having been placed on the original list in 1973 and been maintained on there, largely due to human-caused impacts. A couple of them have been residual DDT, which we banned in the 1970s, but which still exists in our environment and causes eggshell thinning. But the largest direct mortality event, or source, is from ingestion of spent lead ammunition, which has been well established throughout California condor recovery, which occurs throughout California, into Mexico, and into southwest Arizona and Utah as well.
So are people shooting the condors?
Only occasionally. There have been a couple really unfortunate cases where that's happened. But what's actually happening is lead is a very soft metal. So when it impacts an animal that's to be harvested for game or perhaps managed as like part of a rancher's management or something like that, it will fragment into hundreds of pieces. And while humans don't tend to be as impacted by it because we have a very quick digestive system, a bird who ingests even a small fragments has a much slower digestion process just by its nature. And that little bit of lead will just be ground into dust and get into their system. And as with humans, it is a neurotoxin. And so it can result in a freezing of the digestive system. They can lose their motor control. They can get really weak. They can get predated on, or they can just die outright from the lead poisoning. And as of now, about 50% of condors where we have determined cause of death has been due to lead contamination. And unfortunately, that was the case for us as well in our first mortality, which happened this last January.
Yeah. Is there anything that can be done to mitigate lead poisoning of condors?
California has actually banned the use of lead ammunition for hunting, and to mixed results. California does tend to be pretty heavy-handed when it comes to gun regulation, and there just wasn't the time to do a lot of the communication that is really powerful when it comes to making these transitions. So it's pretty clear that not everybody has transitioned to non-lead ammunition. Primarily copper is what that's made out of. That said, there has been a lot of support from within the hunting community. And that's not surprising to me, both as a hunter and as a tribal member, because the hunting community has been huge in pushing a lot of the conservation that we have done in the 20th and 21st centuries. But this particular piece, for example, was actually just an air gun pellet that he had picked up somewhere, probably from some small game that had been targeted with it, though we can't be 100% sure. And so it's just this tiny little thing, and it ended up in a mortality event. So it's going to be a long road, I think, until we fully transition away from lead, just for practical reasons. It can be hard to find the copper ammunition out there, for understanding reasons, so people can really know why and wherefore we need to do this. But I do think that we'll get there eventually as the information about its impacts on the environments become more widely distributed.
There's also contagious disease. Is the avian flu a concern?
Unfortunately, it is. We were hoping it wouldn't be because vultures in general tend to be really disease resistant. But once we saw the turkey vultures going down, which has been all throughout California and the West, we kind of figured it was only a matter of time. Unfortunately, we first found that this was true in the Southwest flock managed by the Peregrine Fund, where they lost 21 birds over the course of, I think, 2 weeks. To the avian flu. They are very social birds, so if one bird catches it, it's very likely that another might. So far, there have been no cases in California, but once that unfortunate and really tragic mortality event happened, that really allowed us to kickstart getting a highly pathogenic avian influenza vaccine out to the flock. And so as with COVID, which we had gone through not too much earlier than that, it kind of had to go through a testing process, but eventually it was approved for use in condors. And so now every condor that goes out gets that avian influenza vaccine.
Mm. For the condors that are still out there, thriving in the wild, how do you keep in touch with them and monitor how they're doing and if they're going maybe further and further as they get more comfortable?
Managing condors is an everyday thing. We are out there 7 days per week. They are equipped with both satellite transmitters, which kind of give us a broad scale view of how they're utilizing the landscape, as well as radio transmitters, which we actually send crews out to get eyes on the birds specifically to make sure that they are healthy and well. And so our satellite transmitters over time, it's been really wonderful to watch the birds expand. Our first cohorts were kind of cautious. They stuck around our facility where we still provide food and water. Remember, these are young birds who are just figuring out a brand new area. I think they got somewhere around the 30 miles away, 32, 33 miles away in that first year. But by the end of, I think it was by the end of 2024, they'd gotten 93 miles away. So as far south as Leggett in our area, as far east as Hayfork, and then just bopping up and down the coast quite a bit, almost to Oregon, in fact, about 8 miles south of Oregon. So the really cool thing for me as a biologist is not only seeing them expand, but seeing how much more quickly our newer cohorts are taking over the landscape, learning from their elder cohorts, which is exactly what we hope to see.
Yeah. Is there a hierarchy with condors since they are so social?
You definitely do establish a hierarchy. The older you are, the more likely you are to be on the higher end of things. And it's nothing that usually ends up being too serious, but the young birds are definitely taught who's boss as they start coming out. But they still, especially with such a small flock, integrate quite a bit. Our poor young bird, Peinok Beyowak, his name means I'm friendly or I'm kind, was particularly well known for just being friends with everybody, you know, so there's a lot of individuality and love between the birds. Mm.
Finally, I know it's a small flock, but it has been a few years. Have the condors that you released back into the wild begun mating and reproducing on their own in the wild and not in rehabilitation?
Not quite yet, but we are very much looking forward to it. As I mentioned, they've definitely expanded across the landscape. They've started foraging on their own in the wild. That's where they get these lead contamination events. But there's a particular pair, A1, whose name is Flahalet. He was the last of our four to be let go. And so his name means finally, we fly. And our only female of that first cohort, Negem Nitwin Ka, which means she carries our prayers, have definitely been hanging out. They're still socializing with everybody. He started giving displays earlier this year. We do find that they're breaking off from the flock and just kind of going around the landscape together, which indicates to us they may be looking for a nest. At this point, it's very unlikely we'll see a chick this year, but they may make their first attempt next year, which would be incredible.
All right. So still in the friend zone, but there's still hope.
Tiana, they're dating.
Yeah, they're dating. Tiana, thank you so much for an update.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
Tiana Williams-Clausen is the director of the Yurok Tribe Wildlife Department, and we've been talking about the Northern California Condor Restoration Program, which released its first birds almost 3 years ago in the Humboldt County Redwoods, marking more than a century since condors graced their ancestral homeland. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.